Welcome back to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. We are at episode 199. That's a big number. It's almost the big 200, which is a bit of a long time coming, I suppose. Well, it's 200 episodes, so of course it's a long time coming. What am I saying? I'm just rambling now. Anyway, I will introduce you to my co-host. We have the man of Warrnambool down in the south in the freezing cold lands and the icy tundra, often mistaken as a Yeti himself. We have Connor. How you doing?
I'm good. My hair's a little bit long at the moment too, so I kind of got like a Yeti vibe going on. But you did accuse me of scratching my beard before. I don't have a beard at the moment. I've got a little bit of stubble, but not a mighty beard like you might expect.
I've got a really big beard and like no hair. I shaved all my hair off and I have this massive beard and no hair. It looks really weird.
Do you look like a homeless person? But,
pretty much. If I wear an old flat man's cap, I look like a homeless guy. But I'll fix it soon, I'm sure. We also have up in the Queensland himself, Def, man. How's it going, Def?
Good. How are you? What was all that discussion about again?
Something about
scratching
like
their beard. What?
The Warrnambool Gazette.
Yes.
Another sighting of a Yeti or something. Warrnambool. I can't remember.
Warrnambool Gazette. The Moyne Star. That's what it would be.
Is that what it's called? Star.
Moyne. The local area is called Moyne. Moyne. No, we've got the Warrnambool Stand.
Are you sure it's not morning and you're just saying that wrong again, mate?
The area is called Moyne. Who lives here? I live here. You don't. Stop trying to bloody gaslight me.
Well, it's been a while since us three have been on a pod together, I think, from memory. I think we hang out a lot streaming, but I don't think we've recorded anything together.
Judging by the first minute and a half, there's probably a good reason why that is.
This is true. There was lots of behind-the-scenes math and conversation of fighting and all sorts of stuff. Cheeseburger cannons.
Yep.
All sorts of stuff. But anyway, like, what's been going on, Connor? What's been going on in life, man?
Well,
what have you been up to?
I sort of had I'm back at work, so I was on school holidays, and I spent most of my holiday because the weather was okay, but, you know, you get a bit stressed at work, and we're lucky we get those 2 weeks off as teachers, but I spent most of it playing the new Monster Hunter expansion with my brothers. So Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak was the expansion, and that was fun. That was good to catch up with them.
Is that the video game
it's a video game. So on the Switch.
Yeah. But there is a board game, right? There's a board game.
Board game. It's kind of like, I think it's made by the same people that make the Dark Souls board game.
Bloodborne. That was a big Kickstarter.
So, and it's, you know, miniatures based game or whatever. So, it's funny you bring that up because one morning, I was talking to Def, and Def's like, "So, Connor, you're backing Too Many Bones." I was like, "Oh, nah, I don't think I will. I think I'm going to back Monster Hunter instead." And Def goes, "Don't back that rubbish. Going back Too Many Bones." I was like, "Okay, all right." And I did. I canceled my pledge for Monster Hunter, and then I backed Too Many Bones instead. And he was like,
"Do you know if Monster Hunter has delivered yet?
Anyone with it. I haven't seen anyone play it. So I'd say, yeah, Def, again, was right. So, yeah, that's kind of been me outside of games. I see that you've seen the latest Thor movie. I've seen that as well. That was a good, fun little afternoon.
Yeah, some might say that. Oh. I feel really, I don't know, I thought it was good. Like, everyone, sorry, like, I know we should go into board games real soon, but, like, I don't know, like, a lot of people loved it, and I just didn't love it. And I think Taika does a great job, but I think his humor is not my humor.
Yeah, right.
I mean, MJ, she loved it and she was laughing the entire time, but I thought it was good, but it just didn't, you know, blow my socks off.
Hit the spot, wasn't it? Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
But it was still great, though. Like, it was still, and it had some fantastic cinematography in it and some really unique things in it that it's definitely worth seeing on the big screen. But yeah, what about yourself, Def? What's been going on in the Def household?
Oh, it's been a little bit quiet on the multiplayer board gaming side. So it's been a lot of solo. I've played, of all the games I have, I probably played the one that I should not be playing solo, but I wanted to try it. And that was Oath. So that was a bit of a strange experience.
So, like,
What's that like? What?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing because so much of it's based on negotiation or making deals, and I guess you can kind of play out a storyline if you wanted to. But yeah, explain that a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same game. You mostly have this back and forth game of efficiency against, you know, the prince, who is your opponent, and they have this almost workflow flowchart that, you know, takes them from one spot to the next, and depending on the situation, they make decisions and that kind of stuff. But I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to have Oath on the table is because it's so pretty, and I really love the art, and you know, the way the game's laid out and the way new cards come into play. And given my family doesn't, it's not a game that they would play, the only other option until I can get a group for it was to try it out myself. But it was still, you know, it's not the same game, and I probably wouldn't recommend it solo, but it was still enjoyable to go through one game. But other than that, it was mostly been busy with the streams that we've been doing, or the playthroughs on our YouTube channel every Tuesday the last few weeks. And you guys have been on a couple of those, and those have been quite time-consuming, but I think the community has enjoyed them, and it's been good to get some attention from the publishers of some of those games as well, which has been great, and you know, help some of these games do well on crowdfunding and whatever else. But also for us, it's a new thing, so I think people are going to be seeing more of that in the future.
See, I think that I would be right in saying that I believe that Death watches more live streaming of board gaming than Connor myself. Is that correct, Connor? You don't really watch that much,
no,
right?
No, I wouldn't watch a lot. No, not in, you know, sometimes I'll watch like a Paul Grogan explanation of a game. That's probably more what I would watch.
Who?
Paul Grogan.
Yeah. I thought you said Paul Grogan.
Poor fella.
Oh, Paul Grogan.
Paul. No, but that's probably the extent of it. I wouldn't watch one except for ours, of course, for entertainment per se, but that's just because I'll go and watch something else. But I know I've really enjoyed it because I think when we were talking about it, Def, and you sort of floated the idea, we discussed it sort of for a while, but you had said, well, we like playing games together. We like playing games online. Why don't we start streaming it? And you know, then where we've got more content. And for me, you know, I do struggle a little bit to play some games, you know, and some games I won't be able to play with my partner or find a group for, which haven't really been the case for the last couple of games we've played. But in saying that, it's been really good playing those games with you. So we had, we had Isle of Trains, which was fantastic fun. That was really good, and Mini Express, which was awesome as well. Like I think I really, really enjoyed both of those games, and for different reasons too. I thought Mini Express was a lot of fun, sort of pick up and delivery. That was really cool. And you know,
we actually played that the following Friday as well, Connor, like with a group the Discord.
Yeah, cool.
Like, yeah, a bunch of the guys were like, what can we play? And it was like, oh, well, we know that this is a, you know, an hour long game, and we played it with five people, and yeah, it was really good. It was really fun playing it.
Really liked that whole thing, that the whole mechanic of I can play something on someone else's train and get an immediate benefit, but then they are going to get the long-term benefit by being able to deliver those things. For me, that was almost, it was effectively paying for an action, isn't it? You know, you kind of go, oh, it's pretty simple, but it's actually a little bit elegant for me thinking, right, in the end, the way I would play games would be I'm going to store up all of my resources and then have a really big turn, Whereas in a way, you're better off spending your one or two resources each turn for an action to go and get bonus actions, even though it might benefit someone else in the long run. Yeah, it's very, very good. I haven't checked the numbers for their Kickstarter, but I hope it's doing quite well. It seems to be doing well. So, yeah, good luck to them.
Isle of Tran seems to be doing all right. I think, it's... I think it's also a remake of a previous version of the game. So people know roughly what it's about. And Mini Express, like Adrian said, is a fantastic game. We've had everyone I've taught it to the last year or so since I got it from Kickstarter has loved it. And I'm getting the extra maps from the new campaign for sure. And yeah, looking forward to playing that a bit more. But yeah, the streams have been good. I think we will try to do more of them moving forward and get people a little bit more of a visual, content rather than just the podcast. And I think, like you said, Connor, it's for me the main motive was to, play games with the rest of the team because I enjoy that and I also enjoy teaching games. So It's something that fits well, and if it works for people watching and helps the games do well at the same time, then that's great.
I do also like I don't watch many live streams. The live streams I watch are always video game related, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. But I like streaming because you feel, even if you don't engage with the people, even if you don't make comments and stuff, you kind of feel like you're part of the action, like you're still part of it because it's happening right now. Mm-hmm. There's something kind of, I don't know what it is, but seeing that thing saying like live in the top corner, there's something about that that's kind of like cool and different, and it's not something that's 6 months old, like you're there at the same time as the people creating it. And you can interact with the people, which is also great, but if you don't want to, you can just watch, and plenty of people do just sit there and watch and don't talk. But it's also quite interesting seeing some of the conversations that happen in the chat and people enjoying themselves and, enjoying the actual game itself, and some people, saying, I would definitely want to get this now, or maybe saying, it's not for me. Like, it's kind of cool seeing that live as it happens.
It gives us different, sense of satisfaction when you have some members of our community that we know that show up to watch and, chat in the chat while the game is on, or even people that are not part of our community and just happen to catch the stream and come in and say hello. It does give you that additional touch point with the community, which is nice. You don't get that if you do it, a pre-recorded episode where you have, edited and you have simply released as a playthrough. So, I would like to keep doing them. We'll see how we go.
I remember that guy who turned up in the middle of the Bot Factory stream, who's like, he literally YouTubed. Like, he went to YouTube and typed in like Bot Factory playthrough because he wanted to see something about Bot Factory.
Yes.
And then because we were live, ours was at the top and he came in and was like, that's hello? Great. Like, is this going on? I was like, yes, this is live. And it was just cool. Yeah. Like, it's funny. Yeah. Like, and everyone's then chatting to him and he's chatting to everyone else. And it's just, it's something kind of cool about that. So, that's kind of what I wanted to sort of where I was going at the start is like, I know that Death watches a lot of streams and I wanted to see why he likes that as a format to watch as opposed to create. Like, obviously we do it creatively, but like, I'd like to see why you like it as a means of absorbing content, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
But I also think it gives people a good chance to ask those questions or see the game being played live. Like you said, Def, we don't, even when it goes onto YouTube, we don't edit it. It's all there. The time between turns is time between turns. The actions, like the setup's a bit different because it's on TTS or other forms of online gaming. But all that stuff is real time. And there's no editing or cutting out expansive rules or things like that. It's all as it is, well, would be for you. And I've said this a couple of times, but I really appreciate having Def sort of teach those games, because I think you do a really great job of teaching and making it really understandable for other people, including myself. So, and to sort of on a bit of the lighter side, if you ever want to know how not to play a game, you can watch me play those games, and then you can be like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do the exact opposite. So, you know.
There's like me telling you constantly, stop giving Sarah free shares. Why are you keep doing it?
The shares worth zero for Sarah. She's like, yoink. And who ended up winning?
Yeah.
Sarah. So there we go.
Yeah.
But you also, whenever we play games together, you're like, I'm going to sit to the left of Connor, or I'm going to sit to the right of Connor, because I'm either going to like have the benefit of his move, or I'm going to make his life a living hell and it will just let me annoy you.
Make it hard.
Yeah.
Well, I have news for you. Mini Express specifically, I don't know if you've been following the campaign. You're going to laugh so hard at this. They have identified this as one of the game's problems, where if you have a fixed sitting configuration, then the play style of each player, is the same sort of throughout the game. And so it kind of affects how the game plays out. And what they've done is they've come up with this traffic light system. So at the start of each round, everybody gets a green traffic light. Say it's your turn, Connor. You take your turn and you turn your traffic light red, and then you pick who you want to go next.
Wow.
Instead of a fixed, turn, that is going to, I think, make the game so much fun, even more than what it is.
But I just want to play that now. I just want to play that right now. Let's just pause this and come back in an hour.
Because
it only takes an hour. We know it. So let's just do it.
But doesn't that just adds another layer to it? Because you could effectively play this game, and it's not a super, complex or super strategic game, but there's a fair layer to it, and you've got to be somewhat thoughtful. So you can either play it with that mechanic, or you could play it like in a more, I guess, deterministic way. Because what I would do is be like, this share is worth nothing. I'm not going to pick Adrian. I'm going to pick Def because I like Def better. It's like, bang. It's like, why would you need to pick me? But I imagine you would say, like, if everyone is red, you would flip back to green or vice versa. Like, if everyone had been picked but one person, you've still got to pick, that one person. You can't just skip a turn. It's not Uno. Like, you can't just skip them. But, yeah, no, that's clever.
I want to try it for sure.
It is. It's a great little game. And I think I said this when I was talking about it when I was on the podcast last, how you had said, Adrian, you'd be playing, like a couple of 18XX games with Def, and they're like, no, Mini Express is fine. It's easy. You'll love it. And I was like, if it's going to be an 18XX game, I am not going to enjoy sitting in front of my computer and learning this game. But it's not. Yeah. It's a very, very simple, I guess, stock game, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's fantastic fun. And it's funny because when you're taking your moves and stuff, you can see by the time it gets back around to you, like, all the shares are going to be expensive. And you're like, oh, no. Yeah. But I don't want to make them cheap for anyone else. So I'm going to just do the minimum I can. So hopefully the game comes back around to me, and then I'll get a bunch of cheaper ones. Like, it's really clever. It's a great game.
Yeah.
And it works really well on TTS as well. So if you haven't purchased it and you're looking at the Kickstarter, check out the playthrough that we did if you get a chance. And also, if you want to play it on TTS, just check it out on TTS. We played it just recently, and it's such an easy game to play on TTS. So before we move on to any sizzles, I thought it would be quite a good idea to discuss the Spiel des Jahres winner, since that just happened, I think, like 6 hours ago.
I think,
do we all know what it is yet?
I think Dan's going to be very impressed with this game winning.
You reckon?
No, that was sarcasm, because he doesn't think he likes it very much. I think he's like lukewarm. Oh, really? I think he's like, yeah, it's a good game, but it's not like, wow, the greatest game ever. Sorry to put
in. I'll let you say what it is. Since you've dragged down under the
bus. I know. Sorry, Dan. It's Cascadia. let's turn on it. That Mitch loves. He reckons it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, you've sort of got the two opposites of the spectrum in that it's some Mitch thinks it's really, really good, and Def just sorry, and Dan just thinks it's okay. Sorry, Dan, you can edit this out if you want, if you think it's too much slander.
I actually am in the Mitch camp. I think this game is fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I was surprised at how much I actually enjoyed it. And I just thought it was a great game. I don't own it, if I'm honest, because I have a bunch of people around me that do own it. So I would always just, you know, tend to borrow their copy or play their copy.
Cool, fair enough.
I think it's a fantastic game. Like, I think it really is. It's really enjoyable. It looks really nice on the table, beautiful, like, colored things, colored little wooden tokens and stuff. And, yeah, I think it's a fantastic game. So I think it's well-deserved, if I'm honest. So,
yeah. I think it's also, like, an additional nod towards, you know, this award towards, you know, games that have large appeal, which is, I guess, you know, a fair approach. And, I mean, to me, Calico had more meaningful decisions. And one of the things I thought Calico was better than Cascadia was that exactly because it had so much, you know, you had very, very specific room to put down your tiles in your sort of kilt board. You'd have to give up certain things to in order to do others. And in Cascadia, you don't have that. You can sort of spread out, and it is more open. It has more room for, you know, the improvising and, you know, changing plans and doing other things. It's less complex than Calico. And I think that with, you know, the combination of the solid mechanic that is quick play, you know, you've got a couple
quick setup,
a couple of decisions to make in each turn, but overall it's meaningful, and different cards that make for different types of scoring and stuff. I think it's well deserved, and I think, you know, it does show that, you know, the market is wanting these types of games, right? People want to have these types of games that are easy to learn, quick to set up, not a huge rules overhead, but that have that, you know, quite nice, elegant sort of design put into them that you can get 5, 10, 20, 30 games in and not get bored of it.
But I think
that's right.
For me, like, I'm neither here nor there on it. But what I do appreciate is that if this is the Spiel des Jahres winner, this is what the standard of games that people should be aiming for, like you said, Def. It's accessible, doesn't have a massive rules overhead. And, I mean, the art and the design is fantastic. Like, it's Beth Sobel art, so, and we should...
Isn't that what the Spiel des Jahres winner is for, right? As opposed to the Kennish Spiel, which is more of a... Isn't that the one that's more like...
Yeah, I don't know that's what the
word would be for an expert game, like
enthusiast. Game enthusiast, or like, I think, is the roughest translation. And no, but that's kind of what I'm getting at is that, for, you know, even in the last 10 years or so of board gaming, and I've sort of been, I guess, board gaming for, yeah, like I am now for about 10 years, the quality of actual product has not been as high as it has been in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. But I think that if you're asking people to part with their money, it needs to be a product that people are happy to have and happy to look at. So something like Cascadia, it's got awesome art, it's accessible. You know, you can have it set up on your table, and I think people would be more interested in coming in and being like, "Oh, what's this? What are you doing?" And it's effectively just a big puzzle. Right, and it's a puzzle that you can play. You can either play it by yourself, you can play it with other people. So, I think if you are somewhat interested in games, or you haven't really played games before, this is a great type of entry game, without being too much of a nonce. But this is the type of game that can get people into gaming. It's nature. It looks pretty. The theme is appealing to lots of people. And and it's something that people would be used to seeing. All right, so I'm setting up patterns. I'm trying to collect different shapes to score points. So, but I also get what you're saying too, Def, about compared to Calico, what I enjoy about Calico is how tight it can be and the choices that you have to make. But I think for some people, you go from, oh, it's a quilt game, you're getting cats to sit on your quilt, like that's kind of cute, to, oh my goodness, I'm actually stressed about my choices, which may be why some people aren't, it doesn't rank as high for some people as Cascadia.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think that's why, you know, the award went to Cascadia, and I don't think Calico would even be in there running for something like that.
Yeah. So the actual, since we sort of brought it up, the Kennerspiel winner was a game called Living Forest. And I haven't played this. I hadn't even heard of this, if I'm honest. So I'm very interested to see if you guys have heard of it. I've never discussed it with you, so I can only assume you haven't played it yourselves.
And I haven't seen any content for it. I don't know much about it.
No.
And unfortunately for us, I think it's getting better, but unfortunately for us in Australia, where we do get games a little bit later, unless we're getting something, probably Express or through Kickstarter. So, no, I haven't played it either. But, hey, looks kind of cool. Kind of looks like something I'd like in terms of the theme, and it's got a bit of bag building, a bit of push of luck and tile.
All of the animals in it have white eyes.
Does that mean they're good or evil?
Which is creeping me out. No, that's what the Deadites have in Evil Dead. They have white eyes. No. So for me, I see Deadite animals.
Okay. I always thought you had red eyes,
Everyone else naughty. Probably thinks red eyes is naughty. No, red eyes is something else. But but that's a Kevin Smith eye, isn't it?
I know what you're thinking of. I'm not going to say it. I've already annoyed enough people today, so.
it's not your fault, mate. You always have your way of doing it. Anyway, let's move on to some sizzling games. Now we discussed those two big award winners, and congratulations to Living Forest and Cascadia. Like, Cascadia did win some Board Game Barbecue awards, or was nominated for a couple as well. So. And it actually won, I think, Best Light Game from memory or something. It won something. So congratulations to
the designer of Living Forest. I'm probably going to mispronounce this, no surprises. Ask Christensen. So A-S-K-E. So Ask Christensen. And the designer of Cascadia is Randy Flynn. So congratulations to those guys. Those folks, I should say. Yeah. Awesome effort. That must be such, just before we move on, that must be such a great feeling. These game designers put so much work, and a lot of them, it's their side job. They're not full-time game designers, and for them to get some sort of recognition is just fantastic, I think. So the industry is so much better for it, I think.
100%. And it is the Oscars of board games, right? Essentially, it's like the big award you can get in board gaming. So it's pretty cool, to be a winner of that, because it's infamous with the industry. Everyone knows what that award is. Like, there's no mistaking it for anything else. So congratulations. So Def, my friend, what has been getting to the table, or to the zeros and ones and through the stream?
Zero, zero, one, one, zero, zero, one. Yeah.
Over in your house, mate.
Well, I was going to talk about a game that we played together, and I know that you wanted to talk about it as well. Be a good opportunity to do that today, and that's Tallywood Rally, which is the game that we did a tutorial and playthrough on our YouTube channel for in one of those streams that we've been talking about. And this is a game by Final Frontier Games, and it's been designed by Drake Villarreal, who is the developer behind other games like Bardwood Grove and Connor, You.
Endless Winter.
Yeah, Endless Winter, which we haven't got yet here. But this is an interesting one, because I went into this game knowing zero things about it. And we played it first together to learn it, and then we had a three-player game again for the stream. And it was a three-player game when we learned it as well. So it was you, me, and Sarah. And I was very surprised by this game. Not because my expectations were low, just because I didn't know anything about it and I didn't know what to expect at all. And I want to dwell on that for a minute, because I think it shows how much the expectations that we build for some of these games affect, you know, our initial impression of them. And that's not something you can easily change.
No.
So agreed. The game, I've talked about what the game is, and then maybe you can give your impressions. The game is about, you know, rallying for mayor or running for winning the elections in this world that has the same art from the Miko. So, you know, it's like this fantasy world that has these cartoonish characters. The art is very, very nice.
So good. I love it. I love the artwork for this group of games.
Yeah, the box is this really weird-looking troll sort of character holding this baby.
The box is so good. It's like just kissing a baby, like a politician kissing a baby, it's just gross-looking. It's so good.
And the game is actually quite simple. You've got, like, the four different districts, one of each color, and you have the central plaza, and you have this very clever action selection mechanic where you have some cards in your hand and they have symbols on the top and the bottom, and you have to try and play them in your tableau and connect these strings. You have four slots in your tableau, and each slot has different strings at the top and the bottom. And so depending on which location you play your card, and if you play it high or low or in the middle, you connect different parts of that card, and then you take those actions. And the actions are very, very simple, but they all have to do with bringing additional voters into the game, and they usually go into the central plaza, and then you try to attract them into the different districts. And the other thing you try to do, obviously, is increase your own influence in those districts. And the game goes on for four rounds, and you have a few more actions towards the end of the game. But the end scoring is fantastic, and it's very exciting, and reminded me a lot of games with stocks and, you know, economic games, because what happens is you have these influence tracks that you increase for each one of the districts, right? So the blue district, you increase your influence, you have this token that goes up this track. And alongside these tracks, you have certain specific points that get you one share, one part of the vote at the end of the game for this district. The cool part is you don't know how many votes that share is until the end of the game, because you don't really know how many voters are going to turn up to vote. So this is why it makes a huge difference on where the voters are going and what color they are and how many shares of the polling votes you have at the end of the game and those sorts of things. So what happens is you add all of the shares that every player has in each district, and then how many voters are there, and you divide those numbers, and then you have say, you know, 35 voters in the green district, and you have two shares for green, and I have one, and Connor has three. That's six shares in total, so 35 divided by 6 is 5, rounded down. So every share for the green district is worth 5 points. Or five votes, or whatever you want to call it, 5 points. And then, you know, whoever has the most points at the end wins the game. The game is quite simple to play because the actions are simple, but there is a lot of tension in picking the actions, in blocking other people from certain actions, because when you take an action, you place a meeple down and they can't do the same action this round on that district. And there's also a lot of tension around competing for these voters and how you attract them and, you know, how strong one player is or one candidate is in one specific district might mean that others might, you know, let that district go, or they might want to compete for it. I just thought it was great fun. I think this is going to be a cracking game on the table. And I think with four players, it's probably going to be...
The banter and stuff would be hilarious.
It's going to be fantastic, yeah. It's going to be quite chaotic.
Yeah.
It did take us about two and a half hours to play on TTS, but that was part of the stream, us trying to be sort of taking things step by step, etc. But it's not a complex game. And, yeah, we had so much fun playing this. I thought it was fantastic. And I didn't even know this game existed.
Yeah, it's a funny one, hey, because we were asked if we would like to do the stream, and you know, we accepted because that was, you know, a nice thing to be offered. So we would, you know, give it a go. But it's like it's a pairing game that kind of goes with like Barwood Grove,
yeah.
Kickstarter, right? Yes. So like it's not like I didn't have like high hopes or high expectations, but when it's like, oh, it's a little side game that you can get with the main game, you're like, oh, okay, cool, that'll be nice. But man, like, this game has some serious depth and serious, like, crunchy, thinky decision making, action selection, right? You know, doing the right things for such a small little game. I was blown away within the first 15 minutes of starting. I was typing to death like a madman, like a little excited school kid.
Yeah, we were typing to each other. Where do we buy this? We need to buy this right now.
Started asking where to buy it, and I was like, I have the same question, but my question isn't selfish. It's for a friend. He wants to know where to get it because Dev was already trying to buy it. We hadn't even started. Like it was. It's really cool when games come across like that, and then you're like, you're kind of blown away within the first 15 minutes of play. Do you know what I mean? Like there's something that's really clever in that action selection and that tension in choosing what you want to do that got me excited immediately. Yeah. And I started to say to Def, like, hang on, this is just like stocks and shares and 18XX, mm-hmm. but political, yeah. and voters and having majority in certain areas, but this is a game that I really reckon on the table would be like a 90-minute game, no problems.
Yeah, so I remember you end up messaging me and said, you need to get this game. Like, you need to, because we both
backed, I think I mentioned like 10 people saying that.
Backed Barwood Grove, which I'm really, really excited about. So it's great that there's another game that you can tack on. But, I mean, me and Def, we spoke to Drake on the show, and he clearly knows what people like and enjoy in games. Like he's got his finger on the pulse. Final Frontier has realized that and given him, you know, a full-time gig as a game designer, which is awesome. Game developer as well, which is cool that he gets to do those two things together. And if you're interested in hearing the difference between those two, jump on, go back and listen to the episode with him, because he's an awesome bloke. And he's also really, really interesting to listen to. He has some great insights. I know that I'm a big fan of this universe that they're developing, this Five Kingdoms. Five Kingdoms, Five Realms.
Yeah.
Such a big fan that I didn't even know the name of it. But Merchant's Cove is so good. I love the game to death. I really, really enjoyed Barwood Grove that we played it twice. Yeah. Did we not? We played it twice. You might have played it more than me, Adrian. Yeah,
we played it twice.
You know, that's going to be an awesome game to get to the table and teach people. I know they've released a couple more updates on their Kickstarter. So I'm really, really excited. I think, I'll definitely go in and add this to mine after what you've said and the way you've explained it, Def. And the art, like you said, the art's just great. It's a great, and I went back and looked at that box art too. So he's kissing a little like goblin baby.
Little goblin baby. It's so weird. It's so good though. There's something to say about this. Is like you've got this huge Kickstarter. Bardwood Grove is like a phenomenal deck building game. Like we had great fun playing that. Right, both the times we played it, and very excited to get it to the table and play it. But to have its like smaller box sort of pairing game be equally as like interesting and in depth rather than just being like, oh, here's just like a little side game that you can add. And the price point for it is incredible. Like it is not an expensive thing for the amount of game you get, like,
I think
you played it once, you've got your money back.
I think it's $29. So we should we should tell people where they can get it. You can get it from, if you have backed Bardwood Grove, or if you late pledge for it, then you can add it to that, or you can just pre-order it from the Final Frontier Games website.
So they did something similar to this with Merchant's Cove, in that they made this roll and write game, Drawn to Adventure. I wasn't a massive fan of Drawn to Adventure, but I know lots of people that are who like roll and writes. And I was at that point, I think I talked about it last time on the show, how I just had so many, and the roll and writes that I really enjoy are the flipping rights, Adrian. That's what we discussed last time. You know, a Hadrian's Wall or a Fleet or a Three Sisters. Like, that's kind of what I was looking for at the moment. But yeah, it's pretty cool, and it's a great product. You play as a hero that's going off on a quest, and you roll the die based on your powers and stuff like that. So that's another one that you might be able to add on. But yeah, I think Final Frontier on absolute tier at the moment with their games. I'm excited to play it. I think perhaps, Def, you said you might be able to show it to me later down the track. So hopefully we get to 100%. That'd be fun.
Mm. Yeah, they're going to release the TTS mod in a few days, I think they said, or in a couple of weeks or shortly. So keep an eye out for it. I'm sure that there's going to be mention of it in our community for sure.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And another thing as well that I found that's really quite interesting with the game as well is at the start, you start with like these ballot boxes that are in each district. So you start with a number of 12, 14, 14, and 16. And that's how many voters are already in each of those areas. So at the start of the game, you might be backing the one that's got the lowest votes already. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to build that up and get more voters to that area. But you don't know unless you take the specific action that flips it. And I remember in the first game, I think we'd flipped three of the four.
Yeah.
But I think in the last game, Def, I think we only flipped none of them.
Yeah.
We had no idea. So it was a real tension nail biter at the end. It's like, oh, please let me have the one that's got the 16 votes. Like, you know, I want that one. I don't want the 12. I want the big one. And it's really fun. Like, but I could have taken an action in the game that had flipped that. So I knew prior, but it just didn't come around that way. So, but yeah, Tullywig Rally, absolutely great game. Really, really enjoyed it. Blew me away. Like I said, excited, messaging each other like a couple of like excited school kids. Like, hang on a second, this means this. Just like a couple of turkeys gobbling away, like talking rubbish, but having a great time and super excited to play it. But yeah, definitely worth checking out. 100%. So that's Tullywig Rally.
I keep wanting to call it Tullywig Grove because of Bardwood Grove.
I do. Yes, I know, right? It's really hard. But it's a rally, like as in a voting rally.
Yeah, it's a rally, like a rally card. Like, that's what I think about when, like Colin McRae.
That's the
rally.
Next game.
Yeah, well, there's Monsters. Was it Monsters on Board? Is that their other one? Is that the...
Yeah, it is their other one, yeah, Monsters on Board. Connor, what have you been playing? What's been going on?
Look, I said this a couple of weeks ago. There was one game that firmly entrenched itself on my table. So hard to get off, and that is Too Many Bones. And I thought, we haven't talked about it enough in the recent, let's say, 6 months, because we did talk about it an awful lot in the first 6 months of the show. But so if the folks listening haven't played Too Many Bones or haven't listened to us talk about it before, you take on the role of these, I guess, like little halflings, maybe, called Gearlocks. And in the base game, you've got four Gearlocks. So you've got Picket, who has a shield and sort of specializes in defense. You've got Tantrum, who's a berserker, so he's like the berserker archetype. You've got Patches, who's the healer. And I think Patches might be my favorite character.
Really?
I think he is. I think he has some really cool stuff. And then you've got
Poison the Man.
Yeah. And then you've got Boomer, who might be the most interesting, if that makes sense, because it's so different and she's ranged.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, she probably deals the most amount of damage out of all of them. Before we sort of go into them a little bit more detail, what you're doing is you're playing as any number of these four Gearlocks, and you're going off on an adventure. And this adventure has a time limit in days, which isn't turns, but it's encounters. So the number of encounters that you have. And the number of encounters that you have, the number of days that you have to complete your mission is based on the Tyrant, who is the big boss, the final boss that you'll encounter in your travels. The base game comes with 8 or 9, maybe a bit less, number of tyrants, and each tyrant has a type of baddie that they specialize with. So that could be dragons, it could be goblins, it could be bog creatures, it could be, you know, I'm going to say things like griffins, so, you know, beasts and stuff like that. And what you do is, when you have an encounter, a battle encounter, you fight these baddies, and the baddies have values of points of 1, 5, and 20. 1 being sort of grunt minions that, you know, might take you one turn to defeat and you don't really have to put too much thought into it. Cannon fodder. 5, who are sort of the next level up, and they, you know, you might have strategized a bit to get around them. And then 20s, which completely wreck your plans. Like, I'm talking about really, really tough. So you're playing through this adventure. If you've ever played through an adventure game or a dungeon crawl, you'll be pretty familiar with the type of gameplay that you're going to have, because it's chucking a whole bunch of dice. And I'm talking about a whole bunch of dice, like so much dice. So if you like dice chuck, if you like dice chucking, if you like products, if you like playing with pretty things, then Too Many Bones is definitely for you. What you're going to be doing is, once you choose your Gearlock, and I've actually, Def thinks I'm crazy, but I've played with up to 3 Gearlocks by myself. Whether that's efficient or not, it's probably not. Let's face it, if I'm doing something like that, it's probably not efficient.
Do you prefer doing that? Like, or do you, have you gone, oh, what have I done this
for? No, I had this discussion with Def. I prefer it because it means that I get more variety in my game.
And
I'll talk about this in a second, but I have a lot of Gearlocks to play through, and I'd like to play through sort of as many as I can and try different combinations. I do this with a lot of my games, so whether it's a lot of these campaign or adventure games, so whether it's Arkham, whether it's Marvel Champions, I will play multiple heroes at once, once I've learned how the game works. And it's a different experience than playing with someone else, and I wouldn't say it's better or worse.
I'd like to see you try that with Spirit Island, three-handed solo.
I've done two-handed solo with Spirit Island, so... for me, a lot of these games have solo modes, and Def, you're an avid solo player, similar to Mitch, and I think you guys would probably have a better grasp on what would be considered, you know, true solo. I'm doing my little air quotes here, talking about true solo, but for me, double-handed is probably the best. And I think we talked about too, Def, you've said that having the 2 Gearlocks is considered the hardest way to play the game.
Yeah, because of how the you build the queue of baddies that come into the battle. And the way it works is you multiply the day you're in by the number of baddies, but above 2 Gearlocks, what happens is you have more baddies, of course, but what happens is you can only have, at any round in the battle, there's only 4 of them on the battle mat. The rest are just waiting their turn to come in after somebody gets killed. So even if you have more, it is more difficult because, you know, it's a war of attrition kind of thing, but it doesn't make the play harder. So with 2, I found it to be quite difficult, but I've really, really enjoyed it. I've actually played it yesterday and today after a whole year almost. So I've resumed and playing. I've played with Patches and Boomer and Pickett in the past, and now I've started playing with Tantrum as well. But I also play with 2 characters. I find that gives me, you know, the balance of variety and length of the game I want. Some of the tyrants that are, you know, they need more progress points to get to. The game can last quite a bit. So I played the Goblin King yesterday, and it took me 3 hours with two characters. So with three characters, that would be probably at least another hour added to that. But I don't think the game, you know, gets more complex with three gear locks, just gets longer. It's not the same as Spirit Island, where it just, there's a very good chance it will break your brain if you try to play it at three.
And yeah, for me, I sort of set the game up and then maybe I'll play through one or two encounters and then leave it there and go do something else. I very rarely will sit down, and even with Marvel Champions or Spirit Island, will I sit down and play through a whole scenario, a whole mission in one sitting. I'll be like, okay, so I'm going to play through to a point where it makes sense to start again, and then I'll leave it and go do something else, because that's just how my brain works. I know, Def, you probably sit down and get it all done.
Yeah.
But that's just how – and it allows me to take a step back and have a think about it and to be like, okay, like I've tried this. Let's try something else or whatever. But we've talked about the gear locks. The gear locks are the game. Really, like that's what you're playing. Yeah, I mean the bandits are pretty simple. The gear locks are a puzzle within themselves, because what you have is you've got these four basic stats that you'll be really familiar with. So you've got your HP, your hit points, which is, you know, how long you can survive for and you get how many hits you take. You've got your attack. So your attack is the number of attack die you get to roll. You've got your defense, which is the number of defense die you get to roll. But then you've also got your dexterity, which is your movement points and also how many die you can roll in total in one turn. So even if you have an attack of four, if your dexterity is only two, you can only roll two attack die. Now, that might seem
like... And that's like, even if you don't move.
Yeah, that's even if you don't move, because once you move, that takes one dexterity away. Unless, of course, you're fighting... Drellin, where his bog causes you to use two dexterity instead of one to move one space. So
I hate that guy.
Oh yeah, I know. We're always
they're so serious. Yeah. It's like Dev's talking about him like he's a guy at a car dealership that he really actually actively dislikes. He's like a guy personal affiliation with him. He's like, nah, I hate that guy. I hate him.
Dev quite often sends me a message. He goes, "Have you beaten that redacted?" Drellin, like I said, I'm not going to say that word on the podcast, but yeah. And so you're building a character out using those four stats. And the reason why you might want per se to have more attack than you can roll is because some baddies will actually exhaust your attack or defense die, which means you don't have extras to roll after that point. Because if you have an attack value of four and your dice get exhausted, and all your die get exhausted, you can't roll any more defense die, which is how you block damage from the baddies. And some of the baddies can deal heaps and heaps of damage. And they've also got some pretty nasty skills. And one of them, it's the biggest... As you learn the game, you realize that there's ways around it. But break, so break means that any attack die that you use against these baddies are exhausted. So you're like, yeah, I've done like four damage through all these attack die, but they're all gone, because normally you get those attack die back at the end of the round. So there's things to look forward to in that, or to think about. There's two other aspects that make each gear lock so different from each other. One's the backup plan. So on many of the die, what there will be is there'll be a value of one to like four of these bones diagrams, which are these two bones which have been sort of crossed like a skull and crossbones. Now, these bones by themselves have no values and they're effectively a failed roll. However, you can save these die in your backup plan, which ends up being a pretty handy sort of get out of jail free card for lots of gear locks. So, for example, Patches, he can heal any one gear lock for one by spending two bones in his backup plan. And that can be done. They can be saved for other turns. I'm trying to think. Boomer can deal one damage if she spends one backup plan, which is really, really cool. Pickett can spend his defense die as damage, so he does a shield bash, and that's kind of like his MO. So he's building up defense and then bashing with his defense. And then Tantrum does something with his rage die to be able to modify that rage die. And if we were to go through and explain each and every one of the gear locks, it would take like a whole podcast. Like, that's how complex some of these characters are.
It's essentially an entire game. Yeah. It's Gearlock. And this is why I was so excited to get more of them, because every Gearlock that you play new, you start playing new. It's like learning a whole new game. Yeah. Like, it is the game, like you said. You said it best, Connor, right? The Gearlocks are the game.
Sure. So you've got...
That's how I felt. I've only played it twice.
You've got the...
They felt like they were the game.
The basic stats, I guess. You got your backup plan. And then, for me, probably, I don't know, Def, Adrian, what do you think? But the best part of the game are these skill dice. Like, they are just... They make the characters absolutely sing. So if you can, in your mind's eye, if you haven't seen the game, imagine that you've got this neoprene, mind you. So it's all neoprene. It's all waterproof, all conoproof. I guess, I don't know, like a 15 by 15 neoprene square in front of you. And it's got these sections. It's got these cutout sections that you can place these skill die that you can acquire. And each Gearlock has anywhere from like 15, 20 skill die, do you think, Def? Is that about right?
16, yeah.
16. So 16. So yeah, 15 to 16. So 16 skill die. And these skills are super, super strong, but you can generally only use them once per battle. So the choice is, all right, so if I'm playing Boomer, I've got the big boom, right? So I've stocked up all of these parts. I've made my bomb. I'm going to roll this die. I'm going to have the big boom, but am I going to use it now? I'm going to wait till enemies get in position. You know, it's all this.
Or keep it for the next battle.
Yeah. There's some skills that are consumable, so they're really, really powerful, but you lose them once and they're gone. So you've consumed them. Pickett's got one where he effectively goes into, I think it's called Orcish Ale, where he drinks this ale. No, it's what is it? Troll Ale, I think. So he drinks this ale and he's immune to damage for one whole round, but then you have to set his HP to that level. So, you know, you want to go through and have a bit of a mad turn and then you're back to like 2 or 1 HP. It's so clever and so thematic. It's probably one of the most thematic games I've played, in that you are playing a character the way that the archetype is, right? Like, Patches is a healer, so he's going to prioritize healing. And it's even really cool with that, because in order to get your skill, you've got to roll the skill die. So there's a risk in that. You know, you might roll it and you don't get the value that you want. But in most cases, you can then choose not to use that skill die and it goes back to your mat and you can use it another time. So as long as you don't use the skill die, it's there for you to use again if you're not happy with the value.
And even that is thematic, because Boomer's grenades, mm-hmm. as soon as you decide to roll them, that's it. They might fizzle. And if you don't like the result, you've thrown the grenade. It's done. You cannot reuse. Most of the dice is what you say, Connor. You can opt not to use them. But some of them, like Boomer's grenade, as soon as you roll them, well, that's it. You can't take it back because you don't like how the grenade went off, because it went off.
It's gone. Like, you can't be like, I don't want it to explode now. I'm just going to pick it up and put it back in my pack. Like, that's not how.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, because as you were talking about character development, I was thinking about, you know, all of these sort of big, sprawling, you know, 1,000 miniature sort of games that try to replicate, you know, hack and slash video games, or, you know, Diablo type games, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. games that have character development in the core of them. And they all try to do it in a way that mimics the video games. And that is an extremely hard thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think any of them has, you know, nailed it yet, but Too Many Bones does this with using a completely different approach, and it knocks it out of the park, because that's the whole game, trying to increase, even just training the Gearlocks to get new skill dice, get a couple of new skill dice, and you're so excited because, you know, you can now use them in a new way.
And they have flexibility too, and they even say, you know, depending on the length of your game, you might only want to focus on one tree, because there's not enough time. Like you said, Def, you've got a limited number of time to be able to fight the tyrant. And if you don't, you then have a choice to say, all right, so Drellin, for example, that we've talked about before, he has 10 days in his campaign. Let's just call it a campaign. I know they don't refer to adventure. I think that's what they call it. So he's got 10 days. So if you get to day 8 and you have enough progress points, you can fight Drellin, which means that if you fail, you can then fight him in 2 more days after that. But if you're on the 10th day, you then have failed the adventure effectively. What yep. also happens is like you said before, your baddie points are determined by your number of Gearlocks multiplied by the day. So these tyrants quite often will bring in extra baddies on top of the baddie queue number. And it's like, it's the thing of, all right, and this is probably my one teensiest, tiniest, I think the more I play it, the better I will get, even though I've played a lot. But one teensiest thing is because equipping and outfitting your character is so much fun, you're caught between the need and the want to be able to defeat the tyrant earlier so it's not as difficult, but also equipping your Gearlock as best you can and getting those skills. I think there is a fine balance with that. And I think if I do go in and compete in some of the longer campaigns, that it will come more to fruition. But yeah, that's probably my one tiny criticism, is that bit's so fun and they seem to be handcuffing you just a teensy tiny bit, and it does take away from the fun a little bit. But that's a very, very minor, very, very minor complaint for me.
There you go.
Do you think, just a quick question before we move on, do you think with the new content and stuff that's coming out, you know, and all that for this Chimney Bones, and I know that this is going to be like, this was the Unbreakable the last one? That was the last one. Do you think that this game is a game that's still going to get played in a decade, you know, like in 7 years' time or 5 years' time, or do you think that people get through it pretty quick and then they don't keep getting it out? Because I know you're in a bit of a binge at the moment, but do you think once you've played through what you've got and you've put it away, do you think that you would get it out again and it would keep bringing you back to the table?
Do you know, there's some games that you just love to have in front of you. Like, you love to explore. You love to see, let's see if this works. And for me, similar to games like Arkham Horror Living Card Game and Marvel Champions, I love seeing, all right, let's see what happens when I take on this tyrant with these heroes. And the fact that I've got, and I don't even have all of the Gearlocks either. I've got a few. I don't have all of them. The fact that I've got so many that I can grab them out, and the exploration and seeing what works is part of the fun for me. And I can see where you're coming from, because all right, so the last expansion drops, you play through the campaign of that, or, you know, play through all the tyrants. I think it does. I think the one issue it has is it is quite pricey, but it's pricey because it is an incredible product. Like, it's Chip Theory Games. If you haven't listened to us talk about it before, they make an absolutely stunning product. The art's great. It's all neoprene. They have these high quality chips. I could see it being a game that you would introduce to your family. Like, I feel like I'm talking about a partner, but you would, if you had a young family, like, that would be something that you and Finn could play together. You know, if he's 9, 10 years old, I feel like I could take this.
So I could borrow yours.
When I move out to Brisbane. Yeah, that's right. You know, I always quite often talk about my nieces and my sister, and I could see me sitting down, and because it's a co-op game, teaching it to my niece and saying, okay, what do you want to do now? And like, I've talked about how I've played Gloomhaven. I don't think it's any more complicated than Gloomhaven. It's just that there's more decisions that you need to make. So if Gloomhaven is still being played, and it's a different beast as well, because, you know, it's a different system. You're not rolling dice, you're playing cards, and it is, you know, a bit more of a growing world and things like that with Gloomhaven. But for me, I definitely could see it, at least maybe because my family's a bit weird and whatever. But, I could see me playing it in 10, 15 years' time, because it's just a dream to have out there. And it's fun. It's fun to have those Gearlocks in front of you. And if you've played it a few times, go, you know what? I always go down the health pack route. I'm going to go down an attacking route with patches, or something like that. You know, yeah. I always do this first with Boomer. I'm going to try something else.
Well, it's like I know Death. We've talked about this game a million times. Like, and it's a fantastic game. Everyone loves it. But I think that's kind of part of the thing. It's like Diablo 2. Mm-hmm. I've completed Diablo 2 an embarrassing amount of times.
Yeah, yeah, same. Like, yeah.
And now when you reskill your skill tree and change things around, that is where the fun comes in.
Yeah.
So I feel like that is the same thing for Too Many Bones, and the fact that you've almost mastered the game. You know this character really well, but going back in and going, you know what, I'm not going to do any healing. I'm just going to do all poison and all whatever and see what happens. Like, that's kind of where the fun comes in into it, and I suppose the replayability.
So, yeah, and it does. You said, and Def said about it before, you've got games like Diablo, games like Grim Dawn, Borderlands, you know, all those games that are skill tree based. And I love them for that reason you said, Adrian. It's because there's so much replay available, and the fun part of going, no, I'm going to do this time and see how it goes. You know, it's exploration. It's a science test, really. You know, you're coming up with a hypothesis and then testing it. So, I really, really adore this game. I adored it the first time I played it. I adored it when I played it on TTS, and I'm so glad. I don't think I've ever been so happy for a game to finally arrive as I was when I got to my front door and Too Many Bones was sitting there. I was sad because I actually thought I ordered more content than I actually did. So I was like, I got to go back and change that.
That's you got a problem.
Lots of problems. But
we shall move on to our bracket, but you've heard it here first, everybody. Too Many Bones is a science experiment, so you can use that as a reason to quote-unquote do homework, I suppose. And with that, we shall move on to the bracket battle.
Hey, guys. Sorry to interrupt this podcast, but it's Mike, Jules, and Connor here to talk to you about Advent Games.
Dean and his team are amazing. They've got an incredible website, adventgames.com.au, which is heavily curated into categories.
And when you bundle up all the games in your cart, don't worry, there's flat rate shipping. If you live in the Sydney metro area, it's $10 and $15 anywhere else in Australia.
And Dean and his team are big supporters of our Sydney Game Day, so make sure you come along to our Sydney Game Days and say g'day to Dean in person.
So head on over to adventgames.com.au and check out all the stuff that's available there.
The Bracket Battle is sponsored by Game Toppers. Game Toppers LLC. Oh, GameToppersLLC.com, sorry. And we are really like at the pointy end of these bracket battles now. Like, we're going into grand final territory, like on the doorstep. So I found this quite interesting as well. So this is last week's bracket, and it's Quedlinburg versus Raiders of the North Sea. Now, I feel like these guys are both best known by their abbreviated names of just Quacks and Raiders.
Yeah. Well, Quacks makes sense. Right? So
the only reason Raiders is known is because it went up against Gaia Project in the previous round. That's the only reason, nothing else.
Well, they've had, I was looking at it, they've had, quite a journey, to be honest. They've, knocked out big games.
I was just looking at that. Yeah, it's like, I feel like scary. It's targeted to us three with Raiders. So I just looked at it. They knocked out Gunshon Clever. So that, first of all, I hate it. then it got Jottle, so Jaws of the Lion, which me and you, Adrian, we love, and Def, you're a big fan of Gloomhaven itself. Then it knocked out Barrage, which is your favorite game, AD. And then it knocked out Gaia Project, which is Def's favorite game. It's like, come on, all three of us should be cheering against Raiders of the North Sea because of that. You know, you cheer against whoever beats you in the finals.
That's it. But then Quacks also knocked out Viscounts, knocked out Viticulture, Feast for Odin, and Two Rivers. Like, what a beast.
I feel like that's a shot at me too. But I actually like Quacks. I don't like Raiders that much. So I'm like, it's Quacks.
Yeah, I feel that Quacks is could potentially go all the way and could win it. Because it's just, we've looked at this and it's an accessible game. Like, we've been talking about that recently, like how games are just,
you know, with Cascadia and things, like you want games that everyone can play, everyone can enjoy and have fun with, but also a little bit of thinky. And I just think Quacks is a game that will be still talked about and still played in 10 years.
I think it's a new classic because it does it does something that's different, but not so different that people are like, what? What's this mechanic? It's like you pull a token out of a bag, but it's like, of course you do that. That makes so much sense because you're pulling it and putting it in a cauldron. But I think I can't remember if I said this last week. I've taught this game to multiple people. Not one person has ever said, I don't like this game. And most people that you teach to the first time, they lose because their pot explodes all the time, but they still love it. Like they still love that process of sticking your hand in your component bag and drawing it out. And like what you know, we always talk about like with Finn, your egg Finn on to see if we can you won't draw a white one, you won't draw a white three.
No, I literally sit at the table and clock my arms like a chicken and go on, chicken, and he's like, no, I'm not doing it. Then he does it, he goes, oh no, I knew I shouldn't have done it. Like it gives that every time. Like and we've played this game a lot, like a ton of times, 30 times probably with him, and it always gives a smile and a laughter and a big you know and sometimes also a little bit of rage. Mainly myself, because I can't handle it. But stupid game, it's all luck. Oh, I hate this. But, you know, it's always a laugh. It's always a great, fun game to play. But anyway, we shall move on to the results for last weekend. That is actually Quacks of Quedlinburg is going through. Actually knocked out Raiders, and it's 122-91. So it was it did pretty good, to be honest. It was pretty tight on a couple of the on most of the votes, apart from Facebook. It got most of its votes in the Facebook community there. So yeah, I wish them best of luck. So, but anyway, we shall move on to next week's bracket, and we're not going to really talk about it too much because I feel like this was just spoken about the week prior because these games have both already been. You know, we're at the pointy end. There's only like four teams left, or four teams. I feel like I'm doing a sports thing.
Of all the people in this podcast, who's like the most anti-sport?
Shouldn't say teams. Yeah. Someone was talking to me about a sports thing today. MJ's friend was around, and they were talking. She was explaining something about the State of Origin game. And she said, like, I'm not kidding. I'm going to tell you now that this is the most intense State of Origin game I've ever seen. And I said, I'm going to do one better. It's the only State of Origin game I've ever seen. And she's like, just shook her head at me. It's like, go back to England, you pommy. I was like, thanks. But yeah, I still didn't watch it. But anyway, I digress. Brass Birmingham versus Architects of the West Kingdom FC. So... that's a football club reference. But the Architects of the West Kingdom. What do you think, guys? Like, I think that it's basically, again, we're at the other end of the spectrum on both of them. It's Brass Birmingham, number like 3 or 4 or something on BGG, classic, loved by everyone, super high economics game with – like super tight mechanics and really knowing the game is kind of the key to doing well at the game. Yeah. You know, the more you play it, the better and the better and the better you get it. And the more you can crunch those numbers and you know, really and get into it. Whereas Architects of the West Kingdom is, you know, introductory game. Anybody can play it. And Architects also does bring like the element of fun as well. Like it's a really fun game. Like you can mess with people and screw them over and, you know, do what Finn and Raph did one time and just arrested everybody and ended up with no meeples on the board. So I was like really limited in what I could do. But yeah, they're both great games in their own right. I'd just leave it up to you guys to vote on the different socials. I believe I know where Def would be lying with this one. And I think I'd know where Connor would lie in this one. So, do you guys have a opinion on the outcome for this, or what you'd like to see the outcome for this to be?
I really like Architects. It's a great game. Play it with my family quite a lot, and the couple of times that we played it at higher player counts with other people, it was it was great, but Brass for me is phenomenal. It's one of the best games I've played, so clear winner in my vote. We'll go to Brass.
Yeah, I haven't played Brass, so this is one of the rare matchups where I haven't played one of the games. I know, shock horror. But so I would vote Architects, but from what I've seen, I think I'd really enjoy Brass Birmingham.
We need to fix that.
Yeah, we do.
I was about to. That's literally the next line that's coming out of my mouth. we're gonna fix
that. Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think it's comparing ice cream and bicycles, really, like with these two. But again, I think Architects has a very wide appeal. I think it'd be a few people's, if not favorite, then in their top five. But I think that's the difference, right? I think there's a lot of people that would be like, Architects is a great game. It might be my top five, top 10, maybe top five. Whereas there's people who are like, Brass Birmingham is my favorite game. And it's never going to not be my favorite game. Yeah. So I think that's probably going to be the difference. True.
Yeah. So we shall see next week, right? Mm-hmm. In the votes for that one.
Yeah.
Good luck to both teams in that. So. And then with that, we shall move on to the oaths. Just before we move on to the oaths, I'd just like to thank all of the Patreons and also our sponsors for committing their time and everything to our communities. We really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Like, we are wouldn't be able to do this as much without your support. I'd also like to say, would love to see people on the streams, like on the Tuesday nights now. We're not just a podcast anymore. We are doing these streams on Tuesday nights at 7:30 p.m. AEST. And yeah, come on, hang out, talk with us, chat amongst yourselves and get the banter going on the games. We even did like our own policies for Tallywood Rally on different things for people would, if they won the game, would make our policies come true. So that was quite fun. That was quite a good twist on the end of the game. We're also doing the game days. So we actually have one in Melbourne and in Brisbane coming up. Please check out Eventbrite for both of those or our Facebook page. You can also go to Apple Podcasts and leave a star rating. Or if you leave a 5-star rating, Dan will actually read it out in any language I understand it. So he says, I think he speaks like 14 languages or something. So you've got a pretty good high chance of being cool with that. And also Spotify, you can do a star rating on Spotify now, but if you don't have access to those and you listen to a different service, please just join our community, like our Facebook community, Instagram, Twitter, obviously the YouTube one that we're now starting to get into, and also the Discord community, which is a fantastic community. It really does feel like a family in there. Like, we talk about movies, we talk about video games, we talk about cooking and food, and we have all these different categories and stuff inside there that people just talk about all sorts. And we've also had a lot of people joining who've been into painting, because Jules does a paint club and that's really popular, like on a, I think it's the last Sunday of every month from memory. You'd have to double check that on the actual Discord itself, but people just hang out and just paint miniatures. Some people don't even paint miniatures, they just come sit with a beer and just chat, and it's really nice. Like, it's a really nice atmosphere to hang out and just talk about all sorts of things in life. So, massive thanks to our patrons and sponsors and obviously the community as well. So we shall go to my oath first, which was currently, because I've just moved house and I'm in a new location this time round, was to just play some online games. And I feel like I have done that. I played Mini Express with a group in the Discord. I did some streaming with Death and Sarah and also Connor. And I'd class that as oath fulfilled, right? We cool with that?
Yeah, man.
That's enough.
Yeah, we'll let you get away with that. What was the first game on the table in the new house?
Do you know what? Officially the first game on the table, I think, technically was transcontinental, even though it wasn't played. I just got it out and showed Mitch.
No, it doesn't Mitch count.
Mitch came round. We haven't played a game since we moved in.
Oh.
I can tell you that much. It's, you guys, like, yeah, we have no driveway or anything. Like, we've got a lot of work we're doing at the moment. But I would like to, you know what, when I was moving, obviously I was going through all the drawers and packing things and boxes and all these different games that were kind of spilling out of drawers. And I was like, I didn't even know I had this. Like, what's this from? And stuff like that. And there's a little deck builder in there that was given to me by Dan from 2D6 a long time ago. And he said, you and MJ would love this. It's a really good little game. Like, you know, take it and play it, you know, and borrow it for as long as you want. And that is Star Realms.
Oh, yeah, now, for sure.
Of course.
I haven't played it. I saw the box and was like, man, like, I actually really do like deck builders. I mean, man, Finn and I play a lot of Aeon's End. If I ever asked for a game, like you were saying before, Connor, how about co-op games? Mm-hmm. Like, kids love that. Finn loves playing Aeon's End. It's his, if he asks for any game, he always says Aeon's End. He picks it over King Domino or any of those other games that are kind of more lent to his age group, and he always picks, like, I'll play Aeon's End anytime, and can we change the spells, and can we do this, and, you know, can we change the relics, and all this kind of stuff. So he likes the building a hero thing. He plays a lot of those kind of MMO games on his different various consoles and stuff. So, yeah, I would like to play Star Realms, the competitive deck builder, because we don't really play many competitive deck builders, mm-hmm. So I would like to give Star Realms a go and see what it's all about. And I think it's one of those games which is kind of like Res Arcana. Once you get into it, you're into it, and you just, you will smash out like four or five games back to back, or, you know, a few games back to back, and really manipulate the cards and know the game well. So it's a game that I'd like to not only get to the table, but play three or four times in an evening and really get a grasp of it and see where it goes. So I shall swear an oath to play Star Realms.
Nice.
Very good.
Thanks.
Oh, do we have to pick who could? I see how this is.
Well, I was so relieved that you said that was fine. I was like, whew.
Well, so I'll say, anyone, right, like, so go next. We have the VCE here. I think everyone else has the HSC. There's like, you can get a satisfactory, which means you've effectively like achieved the outcomes. It doesn't mean you're going to get a good score at the end of the year, but that's effectively what we're giving you. It's like, okay, like, you've done the bare minimum. So we'll give you a pass.
Is that like a C minus?
No, it's like, that's like, that's like a,
an E.
An E plus.
E for excellent, right?
Yeah. I mean, sure, whatever. So my oath was to start the Sinister Motives campaign for Marvel Champions. So this is the Spider-Man based one. You fight lots of Spider-Man villains. There's been a couple of smaller Spider-Man villains, like there's been a Green Goblin one or whatever. So this is pretty cool. And it changes things up a fair bit in that there's kind of so the last three campaigns, there's either been like a store where you can buy cards, or you get cards given to you throughout the story that can go into your deck. This one here, depending on you're effectively, you're, if you save parts of the city, you saving the city gets put up on like the Daily Bugle, which is the paper in the Marvel Universe in New York City that J. Jonah Jameson works for. He's the editor, and Peter takes pictures for. But if that happens, you then get notoriety, so people are more willing to do things for you, but the villains become harder. So it's like, if your notoriety is this high, you get to do this. You get to take this particular card. But also, the villains are now aware that you're on their case. So it's a bit of a change from the previous ones. It's kind of cool. I was hoping to play through a bit more, but as you might have seen on Friday on our Facebook page, I got a very funny hero here from my local game store, and that was Spider Ham. So he's from the Into the Multiverse movie. So he's quite, I think he was quite popular in that. So Spider Ham is one of the heroes I'm using. He's got a Justice deck, and the other hero I'm using is one I've already played before, and that's Nova. So I'm using Nova for my, he's got an aggression deck, and Spider Ham has got a justice deck, and they're going quite well at the moment. So I'm up against Sandman, and then you fight the Sinister Six. Yeah, it's really, really cool. So, yeah, it's looking like grammar. So, yeah, tick that one off. That's been done. My next oath, and again, I don't know, Def, I don't think you and me are good influences on each other. Let's face it. I think we're pretty...
No.
Pretty,
the reason I stayed away from going first is because I'll probably going to piggyback off what you were just about to say now.
So, on Kickstarter, there has been a volume 2 or version 2 of a game I was super interested in, and I didn't back it, and I kicked myself afterwards. So there's sort of like, yeah, volume 2 or a revision of Company of Heroes, the board game. Now, Company of Heroes is a fantastic real-time strategy game where you base build and increase the strength of your units, and it's set in World War II. So there's Company of Heroes 1, 2, and 3 is coming out soon, I believe. But even if you haven't heard of it...
Yeah, number 3 is coming out later this year.
Even if you haven't heard of it, that's fine, because I have heard that this game is really, really fun. So my next oath is, while there's a limited time left to back the campaign, I imagine they're going to have a late pledge or something, I would like to play Company of Heroes, the board game, online, not the video game, because I know I like that. So I would like to play Company of Heroes online to see if I want to back it. And then, yeah, so it kind of be like a twofold thing, because if I really enjoy it and I think it's got some wheels, then I probably will back it. But I think it'd just be fun to do anyway. So I kind of swear the next time I'm on the show that I will have played Company of Heroes on TTS. Company of Heroes, the board game, I should say, on TTS.
I feel like you're just trying to write a reason of why you're going to back this game. Like, I think you're just going to back it. I think you're going to love it and go, oh, this was really good. I love this.
I've got to do it for the podcast. Yeah. So, yeah. I constantly have the Kickstarter page open. I'm like, oh, what can I afford to add to the, if I get it, what can I afford to add to the pledge? Do I just get the base pledge? And then me and Def are like, oh, should we get the, we're constantly like just moaning.
Can't just get the base game. Can't
you gotta get the dice game. Tray. You get the extra dice, and you got to get the loadouts. Oh, terrible, terrible. But yeah, so hopefully that's fun. Hopefully, I've heard it's great fun. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, nice.
Def.
And Def, on to you, buddy.
My oath is still half because I was meant to play the first mission of the cooperative expansion of On Mars, and Adrian, we haven't met yet to play this, right. So we need to organize that. Yeah. I know that you had to, you know, undergo a massive move between houses, but that's no excuse. So we need to do that. So I haven't done that yet. The second part of the oath, though, I did, which was to play Railways of the World, which just arrived a few days ago, along with a ridiculous amount of maps that I did not remember ordering. And, Railways of the World, for those that you don't know, is like a remake or a spin-off or a re-implementation of Age of Steam. And if you've played Age of Steam, you'd know it as, you know, you either call it Age of Steam or that meanest game that ever has been made. And it's so mean that they had to do a re-implementation to make it a friendlier game. And the new friendlier game is so mean that, you know, it gives you a bit of an idea of how mean Age of Steam is. But Railways of the World is like this lighter sort of version of Age of Steam where you build routes for your trains to go through in different maps, and you deliver goods from one city to another, and you gain income, and you can take loans to finance your operations and things like that. And only two quick things about this game. I opened the core box, and it has the largest, I think it has the largest board from every board game I've ever seen on the table.
Show me that. I was laughing.
Is that the Australian map one?
The Australian map is equally big, but the core game has the Eastern US.
Ah, yeah.
And then as soon as that initial shock sort of, you know, was over, I realized that's half the map, because actually you can get the railways of the Western United States map, and that's the other half of the map, and then you have a transcontinental kind of map. They have even a playmat that you can buy, which is like 1 meter by 1.8 meters or something crazy like that.
Wow.
But yeah, it's a great game. Crazy. I did not think it was going to be as involved as it is, like, as in it has events, and it has railway barons that you can do some special things with, and it has a lot of things going on. I'll sizzle it in one of our next episodes, but yeah, I've played that, and I don't think I'm going to regret buying all of this stuff for it. And as a next oath, I think Connor covered me. I've been having the Company of Heroes Kickstarter page open on my browser tabs for days now, and avoiding clicking the button. So I think I need to sit down and see if we can find a way to play. Mm. I'm not sure even if there is a tabletop simulator version, but if there is, that's going to be my oath. If there isn't, On Mars will have to be it for the next time.
Cool. Nice. Well, I'd like to see that Company of Heroes actually as well, because I played the second game a lot. I didn't play the first one, but I do like, I don't know, like I'm enjoying seeing some of these video game IPs getting made into board games. I'm really enjoying just seeing what they come up with and how they make those mechanics interesting and how they make it tense and make it feel like the game, kind of like what we're saying with Too Many Bones. Like, its replayability comes from its skill tree selection, kind of just the same as Diablo. Like, you know, it's just a hack and slash game, but the fun comes in from the gems that you infuse in the items and the skill tree and all that. And I'd like to see how they implement what they did in Company Heroes in a board game. So yeah, it sounds great. I'll if you guys are playing it and I'm around, I'll try and watch some. And I'm
sure, for you'll sure. Be, yep.
You know,
come in and
showing it in the Discord at some point. So
yeah,
say how wrong I am.
Yeah, give you. Yeah, exactly right. Oh, you know, I'll be there for that. I'll sit on your left, and I'll just do that the whole time. Free lads, Connor, irritation. That's it. So anyway, thank you very much for listening, guys, and. Yeah, I hope your next game is a sizzling one. Good night, everyone.
See ya.
Cheers.
Bye.
What would you do in a fight against me? Seriously. I know you'd probably like throw sand in my face or kick me in the
head. I would treat I'd treat you like they do in like those cartoons with the dogs. I'd just throw a steak on the floor and you'd be like, and I'd just run past you. That's what I'd do.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know you'd fall for it.
Something, yeah, a cheeseburger or like
yeah,
a cornetto or something like that. Yeah.
What's the discussion about? I've kind of lost you there 3 minutes ago. What?